Aid for Israel sparks controversy.
The task force submitted their findings last week to the administration, which must report to Congress by May 8th on whether Israel is complying with international and U.S. laws.
Plus, the battlefield's impact of American aid for Ukraine.
When we were talking to soldiers in the trenches the night it got passed, I mean, literally, you know, people applauded. You could feel the emotion in their voices. This keeps them in the fight.
And later, Amnesty International releases its annual report, and today is World Malaria Day. Today is Thursday, April 25th, and this is VOA's Flashpoint Global Crises. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. The military aid packages that U.S. President Joe Biden signed on Wednesday are not without their controversy. The $26 billion wartime assistance package to Israel gives that country's military support at a time when there is increased scrutiny over whether Israel's military is meeting U.S. human rights standards or following international law. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wiedekuswara has the story.
Israel is the largest recipient of U.S. aid, nearly $4 billion a year, most of it in the form of military assistance. The United States is about to give $26 billion more.
My commitment to Israel, I want to make clear again, is ironclad. The security of Israel is critical. It will always make sure that Israel has what it needs to defend itself against Iran and terrorists it supports.
Military aid to Israel comes as the Biden administration conducts an internal review of whether Israel and other partners provided with American weapons comply with international and U.S. laws. The Netanyahu government has told the U.S. they did. A volunteer group of academics and former administration officials critical of Israel's war conduct disagrees. It is urging the administration to stop arms transfers. Co-chair Nora Erekat is a professor of international law at Rutgers University.
Out of the 16 incidents we documented, 11 out of the 16, Israel does not even claim that there was a military target, nor does it provide a justification. In half of those incidents, the attacks were on residential homes, sheltering families inside.
The task force said it reviewed thousands of incident reports, including on IDF airstrikes on two refugee camps, Maghazi and Jabalia. Each attack killed dozens of people. An IDF strike on an apartment building in central Gaza that killed at least 106 civilians, including 54 children, was also cited. The task force submitted their findings last week to the administration, which must report to Congress by May 8th on whether Israel is complying with international and U.S. laws. The State Department is also set to release investigation findings on whether to restrict assistance to an Israeli security unit accused of human rights violations in the West Bank, mostly before the Hamas attack on Israel on October 7th. Israel criticized any proposal to restrict aid. Israeli War Cabinet member Benny Gantz said that Israel is a democratic country with a government, an army, and a hierarchy. He said that imposing sanctions on a specific unit is not the right way. Israel has been retaliating against an October 7th Hamas attack that killed 1,200 people. More than 34,000 Palestinians have been killed in the war, mostly civilians. The $26 billion aid package for Israel is part of legislation passed by the Senate late Tuesday that also includes $61 billion in aid for Ukraine and $8 billion for U.S. security in the Indo-Pacific. Patsy Wiedekuswara, VOA News, Washington.
Much of the controversy over the foreign aid bills was over sending more aid to Ukraine over the objections of many conservative Republicans, including former president and current presidential candidate Donald Trump. When the bill did pass, news of its approval raised optimism in Ukraine as that country braces for an expected Russian assault this summer. But as Anna Chernikova reports from Kyiv, there's also concern that some of the package, $10 billion, comes in the form of loans that the cash-strapped nation will have to pay back.
Approval of America's $60 billion aid package to Ukraine brought hope to people on the streets of Kyiv as they brace for a Russian assault expected in a few weeks. Many here had worried the U.S. was abandoning them. They did not want their last names used for security reasons. Kyiv resident Artem says he is very glad that this issue has finally been moved forward.
I'm very glad that this issue has finally been moved forward. Finally, there will be help for Ukraine from the US. This brings joy. I think that any Ukrainian will tell you that this was a very critical issue.
Fellow Kyiv resident Vasil says there will be more help, more equipment.
There will be more help, more equipment. We will win faster. Faster the peace will come, without war, without losses, without grief.
People say they are grateful to the American people after weeks of tension made worse by a delay in the aid passage. After the package cleared its first hurdle in the U.S. House of Representatives, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky thanked American lawmakers, saying the aid will benefit both Ukraine and the United States.
We appreciate every sign of support for our country and its independence, people and way of life, which Russia is attempting to bury under the rubble. America has demonstrated its leadership since the first days of this war. Exactly this type of leadership is required to maintain a rules-based international order and predictability for all nations.
Military analysts here say the U.S. aid, which includes long-range missiles, could be a game-changer on the battlefield. Oleksandr Musienko, head of the Center for Military Legal Studies, says U.S. support, including advanced long-range guided missiles called ATACMS, is critical as Ukraine is running short on weapons and ammunition. He says Russian troops are preparing to intensify their offensive in the east. Musienko and others believe chances have increased significantly for Ukrainian forces when they face the Russian offensive that's expected in the coming months. Washington's aid package to Ukraine consists largely of loans, which has touched off an intense debate in Ukraine. The country is already struggling with a national debt that has reached $145 billion, up from nearly $90 billion at the start of the war. Some economists and politicians are raising questions of how and when Ukraine will be able to pay it all back. These are desperate times for Ukraine, and for many Ukrainians, what's most important is the money is coming now. Anna Chernikova, VOA News, Kyiv.
One important part of American military aid to Ukraine is the Army Tactical Missile Systems, or ATACMS. Anna Chernikova is back with this update.
U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan confirmed the latest media report that Ukraine had already received long-range ATACMS missiles as part of a previous U.S. military aid package. He said this during a briefing at the White House on April 24. Sullivan confirmed that in February, U.S. President Joe Biden instructed to transfer a significant number of ATACMS missiles to Ukraine for use within the sovereign Ukrainian territory. According to preliminary information, Ukraine has already used them at least twice against Russian forces in the temporarily occupied Crimea and the Zaporizhia region. ATACMS long-range missiles are part of a new package of U.S. military aid to Ukraine announced on April 24 after the law on additional funding for American allies came into force. According to the experts of the Institute for the Study of War, the ATACMS provided to Ukraine by the United States can weaken Russian logistics and threaten airfields and warehouses of the Russian Federation. However, for Ukraine, they will have an operational significance if these strikes are reinforced by ground operations of the Ukrainian forces. Analysts note that American security assistance may arrive on the Ukrainian front line within the next few weeks. That is sooner than the Russian side expects. Anna Chernikova, VOA News, Kyiv.
You're listening to Flashpoint Global Crises from the Voice of America. I'm Steve Karish in Washington. A look at the annual report from Amnesty International coming up in a few minutes. First, though, we've heard from regular citizens and we've heard from the political classes. But what about the soldier on the battlefield, in the trenches? What do these new U.S. aid packages mean to them? To find out, I'm joined by Mark Santora in Kyiv. He's an editor with the New York Times.
Simply put, Ukraine needs three things. They need ammunition, they need more soldiers, and they need better air defenses. The passage of this package by Congress helps with two of those, with ammunition and air defense. And when we were talking to soldiers in the trenches the night it got passed, I mean, literally, you know, people applauded. You could feel the emotion in their voices. This keeps them in the fight. And so I don't think I can overstate just how much this both is needed and the boost in morale it gave Ukrainian troops who, quite frankly, are on the back foot across the front at the moment. But the big question now is how fast can it get here? And I think, you know, for the guys in Chasiv Yar, which is under attack, or west of Avdiivka, which is under attack, or up near Kupiansk, which is under constant attack, it can't get there fast enough. And so this boost in morale, this sense that they can, that you know, they'll be able to stay in this fight, that was deep and heartfelt. But, you know, now they're back to the business of using what they have and waiting for this to arrive.
So the rubber meets the road, essentially. They've got to get those new weapons to the troops in the trenches. How does that happen without getting shelled by the Russians?
Well, you know, remarkably, the logistical chain for the movement of Western weapons, which is a closely guarded secret, has worked well throughout the war, at least as far as we know. So, you know, the question is, there's different things the Ukrainians need, and things like shells for the big artillery guns they need immediately. And those things might be able to move relatively quickly. They also need things like armored vehicles. They need spare parts. They need everything, really. So, you know, it's some things will arrive faster than others, but most military analysts think it'll take at least 4 to 6 weeks to start to change the dynamic on the front. And then you have the question of air defense, and that one is much less clear to me. This package doesn't bring in, for instance, a new Patriot battery, and Ukraine says they need at least 7 and probably 15 or maybe even 50 to really close their skies. And so there's a separate effort taking place across Europe to try and find some of these more complex systems that can go after Russia's most sophisticated ballistic missiles, which over the course of this spring have really wreaked havoc again on the country's already battered energy grid.
And as we've just heard from our correspondent in Kyiv, ATACMS are now going to be a part of Ukraine's arsenal. What does that mean for the soldiers? What capabilities will it give Kyiv that they didn't have before?
Yeah, so when we think about the war, there's the front line, the trenches, but then there's a deeper war that takes place between both sides where they want to do longer range strikes going after critical command and control centers, big concentrations of troops, airfields, things like this. And for the longest time, Ukraine, its reach was sort of limited. It couldn't even reach all of the territory inside of Ukraine occupied by Russia, both in the south and in Crimea. What this does is it opens up places Ukraine has not been able to reach with the weapons at hand to direct target strikes. And so the Ukrainians had things like the Storm Shadow and the Scalp from Britain and France, but this really gives them a really new and important tool in their arsenal. So what we're likely to see is the Ukrainians, as they're trying to hold their lines on the front, trying to weaken the Russians' ability to keep up these offensives at a sustained pace. And so, again, all of this is sort of a race right now because the Russians are about as strong as they've been. The size of their army is, according to, you know, U.S. officials, something like 15% larger than it was even at the start of the war, whereas the Ukrainians are in a pretty bad state because of 6 months of delays in getting these weapons here and just the attrition of 2 years of brutal fighting. So most people think the Kremlin is going to try and exploit this window, this period while this stuff is moving here, to do everything they can to unbalance the Ukrainians on the front, seize new ground, hit what targets they can across Ukraine, whether that's energy, infrastructure, military targets, or just like they're doing in Kharkiv, trying to sow terror and cause people to leave and flee and create a new refugee crisis.
And when can we start to see results that these new munitions are making?
I honestly don't know. I think we're all watching to see. I think, you know, when we see the next large wave of Russian missiles and drones, which, you know, happens pretty regularly, we'll see how the air defense is. When we see the front line start to stabilize and the Russian, you know, attempts to advance not succeeding, then we'll know that things are stabilizing there. Or if we see the Russians able to push through in ways we haven't before, then we'll know that there is a lot still to be done. So, you know, I wouldn't want to hazard a guess, but I think, you know, we'll see it in the results on the ground and in the air.
Mark Santora is in Kyiv. He's an international news editor for the New York Times. Mark, thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
Thanks for having me.
A breakdown in the international rule of law is being accelerated through rapid advancement in technology and artificial intelligence, which risks supercharging human rights violations. That's according to the new annual report by human rights group Amnesty International. VOA's Henry Ridgewell has more.
Amnesty International offers a stark warning in its annual report. The international rule-based order is on the brink of collapse.
Perpetrators not only violate international law, but seek to justify those violations in the name of self-defense, national security, or counterterrorism.
Amnesty highlights the conflict between Israel and Hamas. The Hamas-run health ministry in Gaza says more than 34,000 people have been killed, most of them women and children. The figure, which includes Hamas combatants, cannot be independently verified. Again, Agnes Kalamar.
Israel has violated the Geneva Convention on a very large number of occasions, including through the targeted killings of civilians, the destruction of civilian infrastructures, the use of famine as a weapon of war, the collective punishment of Palestinians, the greatest number of journalists killed, the greatest number of humanitarian actors killed.
Israel strongly denies breaking the Geneva Convention or targeting civilians, whom it says Hamas uses as human shields. Israel also denies blocking relief supplies into Gaza, contrary to numerous such accusations from aid groups. Kalamar says Israel's allies have failed to stop the bloodshed.
Israel's allies have also protected and shielded Israel, including through the use of veto by the United States at the Security Council.
The U.S. says Israel has a right to defend itself following the October 7th terror attacks by Hamas, which killed more than 1,100 people, with dozens of hostages still held in Gaza. The Amnesty report also highlights widespread human rights abuses and law violations by Russia in its illegal invasion of Ukraine, including the repeated targeting of civilians and infrastructure, which Moscow denies. Again, Agnes Kalamar.
We are witnessing a rule-based order on the brink of collapse because the architect of the 1948 system, the architect of that system, are failing it and are failing the people.
Amnesty warns of a disturbing convergence of human rights abuses and technology, including artificial intelligence. Again, Agnes Kalamar.
It's a wild west, you know, the field of technology and artificial intelligence right now. It must be regulated.
The Amnesty report highlights a worsening civil conflict in Sudan, which it says has triggered the largest displacement crisis in the world, with more than 8 million people forced to flee. The group also highlights China's role in providing support to Myanmar's military rulers in Myanmar's war on minority groups and crackdown on basic human rights. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News.
Haitian Prime Minister Ariel Henry has resigned, his office said on Thursday, as a transitional council prepares to lead the country, aiming to bring back stability amid the havoc caused by widespread gang violence. Henri's finance minister will serve as interim prime minister. Haiti's outgoing government formalized a transition process 2 weeks ago, a month after Henri announced his resignation while stranded outside the country as alliances of heavily armed gangs threatened to completely take over the capital. Gang violence, which has worsened for years, accelerated earlier this year, with more than 2,500 people killed or injured from January through March. April 25th is World Malaria Day, and Pakistan saw the world's largest increase in malaria cases in 2022 following that year's catastrophic flooding, this according to the latest World Health Organization data. VOA's Nazir Ul Islam visited a hospital in Islamabad and filed this report. It's narrated for us today by Bezan Hamdard.
Local resident Yasser Mahmood has been treated for malaria at Capital Hospital Islamabad for the past week. He says he went to the hospital when his symptoms got worse.
The body is too weak. When I cough, my entire body hurts. I can't walk much. I also can't talk a lot as the pain worsens and my throat hurts.
Pakistan ranks among the Eastern Mediterranean countries with the most malaria cases. Typical symptoms include high fever and body pains.
Malaria affects people of all ages. It affects children, adults. But for middle-aged people, it can be dangerous because for most of them, it can affect their brains. This is also called cerebral malaria.
Infections with the mosquito-borne disease rise when the insects have the easiest time finding breeding grounds.
As soon as the monsoon season starts, especially in May when it's raining, water collects in different places. This leads to a rise in malaria cases because malaria is a transmitted disease, transmitted by mosquitoes. So wherever there is stagnant water, like in dirty areas, behind refrigerators, behind tires, all these things contribute to the spread of this disease.
Stagnant water was a major problem following catastrophic floods in 2022. Experts say climate change likely made those floods worse. The resulting malaria outbreak was the worst in Pakistan since 1973, according to the World Health Organization. About 2.6 million people got malaria in 2022, compared to 500,000 the year before.
The number of cases which had been seen in previous years had increased by at least 100%. There were areas which had not been affected, which became affected, particularly in Balochistan and Sindh.
Yasser Mahmood is concerned about his three children's health as well. He says they live in an area near a stream that attracts mosquitoes. The local municipal committee says it is doing what it can and says they will conduct widespread mosquito repellent spraying this year, just as they have done in previous years. For Nazrul Islam in Islamabad, Pakistan, Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
And that's going to end today's program. There's more VOA coverage 24 hours a day on our website, voanews.com, and across our social media platforms. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thanks for listening. Until tomorrow, I'm Steve Karish.
For deeper dives and expert analysis, listen to VOA Podcasts. Issues in the News explores the biggest stories every weekend, while International Edition keeps you informed every weekday. Plus, with a 5-minute newscast at the top of every hour, you're always up to date.